CliffCentral.com.
All right. Good morning, everybody. Monday morning is here and things are happening. And here's Bulelo, here's Leanne Mole, and here's me, and here's you. And how fantastic, right? How cool is it we get to hang out together at such an early hour of the morning? The good news, if there is good news about being up this early, the good news is that the sun, she comes out earlier and earlier every single week. And it's getting closer to that golden, remember, middle of summer, like 5:30? Sun is up. 5:30 in the morning. You know this, Bulelo, because you go for runs. You used to go for runs when you weren't working on this goddamn show every morning. Yeah, when you were in peak condition. And then in the middle of winter, it's like 6:30, 6:45 almost. So the difference is huge, and you can see already it's starting to, you know, you get that golden glow a little bit earlier. Before you know it, you'll be sitting around in T-shirts, and, you know, you won't have to wander around the house with slippers on. It's going to be nice. It's just around the corner. Don't laugh. That's what you do. I know. Who's wearing their slippers? Leanne, are you wearing your slippers?
You mean these?
Yeah, those are the ones. Those are the ones. That's what I'm talking about.
Affirmative.
What's that?
Affirmative.
Okay, got you. Sorry, it was just a bit soft for a second there. I had to boost your levels. We're good now. So, weekend, good?
Great.
Yeah, very good. I did something that I haven't done in a while, and that's think about the future, Leanne.
Ooh.
But on a very, very, very small scale. I'm talking like improve my Monday and improve my Tuesday, improve my week.
But that's how you start. You know, you eat an elephant one bite at a time. You don't suddenly reform your entire life. The people who do that usually end up in very big trouble very quickly.
Exactly. And it really helps when you're feeling demotivated, because one of the things that comes with things like ADHD and women and anxiety and depression is that you stop thinking about the future. You stop thinking about how am I going to feel tomorrow?
Right.
And you start having more sympathy and love towards yourself. And you think, what's going to help Leanne tomorrow? You know? And so I did things like, prepped. I mean, even though I was slightly late this morning, I prepped everything. I mean, I had my teacup ready yesterday afternoon already. I went and bought food so that I could meal prep. So that I've got very these good mason jars, and I can put in all of my goodies and meal prep. Mm-hmm. I pretended that yesterday was Monday morning, and thought about all of the things that would really irk me about work. The fact that I wasn't prepared for a certain meeting, or I knew that I was going to get this message in the morning, so let me rather be proactive. And I went and prepared all those things last night. So, yeah, I'm feeling pretty good for the start of the new week. I hope I can keep it up. That's the big thing.
But that is fantastic, and I promise you that's where it starts. You know, a lot of people think that you can suddenly, you have this epiphany and then your whole life changes in a moment. And, you know, many of us, our lives aren't so bad in the first place, but we're hugely critical of ourselves. So you might wake up this morning feeling, oh, I'm such a loser. I don't have enough responsibilities. I don't get enough done. I feel a bit lazy, blah, blah, blah. The only way to start...
Everyone's better than me.
Exactly. And the only way to get better than that, and the only way to start improving things, and we can talk to Dr. Hanan later on, because he's the expert in this, not me. But the only way is to start with the little things. I mean, it really is that important. You know, what you eat today, where you go, who you talk to, how much you do, what kinds of... And it's little bits of incremental change that turn the whole thing around. You don't suddenly see someone after, you know, a week has gone by and they've become a different person. It always takes a huge passage of time in between for people to really change. And that's why you'll see someone after 2 years and you go, My God, you know, you've changed for the better or for the worse. You hopefully won't say for the worse. But it's because they've it's because they've done a whole lot of little things over a long period of time rather than one big thing. One big thing is much harder to achieve. That's pushing that boulder up the hill.
100%.
Yeah. It's funny, I was thinking about this very thing this morning, but in a much more external way, because I don't really focus inward very often. I find it kind of boring and self-absorbing, and also, who cares, you know? Like, I get very bored with self-indulgent stuff, particularly when it involves me as the self. So I look outside and I see, now here we are with Afghanistan, 20 years later, and everything's going back to where it was, right?
Oh, yeah.
The Americans have pulled out now. And Afghanistan is, the Taliban has taken over like 2/3 of the country already in a space of a couple of weeks. And remember, we thought we'd completely flatten them. When I say we, I mean the forces of good in the world against the forces of evil theocracy, you know, and of, you've got women who are in the United States at the moment complaining about, oh, you know, there's a pay gap between men and women, or discrimination in sport or whatever it is. And here you've got women in Afghanistan. And it feels like an argument that I had with my friends 20 years ago when I was at university about what the biggest threats to the world are. And at that stage, you know, we didn't know about all the things that were still to come. And maybe some of them have been bigger and some of them have been less dangerous. But I still remember then that the threat of militant and orthodox Islam in the world was my biggest concern. And I felt that had subsided, and that Islam has done itself a huge favor by opening up in certain places and in certain ways to the world. You know, there are countries now like, you know, the UAE or Qatar, who are doing their best to be part of the international community. And even in countries like Saudi Arabia, there have been slight but quite significant moves into making women and men a little more equal. By no means are they at the level that they should be, and they are in the Western world. But we'd made progress, and the Taliban had been defeated in Afghanistan, and women didn't have to wear burqas everywhere like they used to in the old days. And they weren't.
It felt like it was an outgoing trend for a moment.
Correct, and like things had got better for women or for people who weren't necessarily into that very, very old school, very medieval application of religion. But here we are. And Afghanistan is now back where it started. This really upsets me. I felt like we'd made enormous progress anyway.
Yeah. And the US's role, what are your thoughts?
Well, what are you going to do? This is so complicated. I don't know if we want to get into a huge political conversation first thing on a Monday morning.
Yeah.
But this is Obama and Bush and Biden and Trump. This is all of them. This is a general and steady decline of U.S. influence in the world. And there's no way to deny that. But I do believe that if you look at those four presidents and the way that the international community has viewed America, it's gone like this. It's been in a complete, you know, tailspin since probably halfway through George W. Bush. Because remember, he came in as president in 2000. September the 11th happened a year into his presidency. And America asserted itself with all the might and dominance that you'd expect of a superpower. And for a minute there, things were, you know, okay, this is the world that we're dealing with. Because I was studying international politics at the time. I remember thinking, wow, this is going to change all the textbooks, and it did. All of those textbooks became null and void. You know, suddenly the world was a very, very different place. And what happened on September the 11th didn't just affect America, because it affected every country in the world. There was suddenly this, oh my God, if it could happen to them, you know. And I don't think this is Biden on his own, but certainly it doesn't help that you've got a weak, doddering old fool in the White House. Mm. That's not going to make it better for anybody. And, you know, at least Donald Trump, for all his faults, was a don't fuck with me president.
Yeah.
You know, Biden, I'm sure that the Taliban are like, oh, please, that old fool. They can tell that they're not dealing with a serious interlocutor here. Whereas with Trump, you're like, he's a little unpredictable. You know, as much as you might not like his politics, he was one of those guys who, I think if America is threatened by someone like the Taliban, I think, you know, a guy like Donald Trump's not going to take that lying down. Whereas Biden will probably first try to figure out if he's a teapot or a hockey stick. And then, you know, six days later, he's going to go, by the way, watch this quickly. This is hilarious. Someone sent me, I got this from one of our listeners over the weekend. Because, you know, we played that clip of the counselor in some municipality who couldn't like string a sentence together in English, right?
Yeah.
Remember we spoke about that and it was all controversial on Friday morning. So here's something from Ricardo, who's been listening to us, and he said he loved that and he wants us to listen to this. This is how to speak Bidenese. Take a listen to this quickly.
Next, no strength, bad at calf care. My boss been wet. Palmas, true inter dash, double depression. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, today I am going to teach you how to speak Bidenese. I'm going to teach you a few words and then we'll get the proper pronunciation and context from the master himself, President Joe Biden. The first word I'm going to teach you today is next, no strength. Next, no strength. President Biden will now demonstrate this word for us.
Donald Trump does pose an excellent threat to this. It's not hypothetical.
It's not hypothetical. Next, no threat. Okay, the next word we've got is badikefkare. Badikefkare. Say it. Try it. Badikefkare. President Biden.
Brock and I think it's a right for people to have badikefkare.
Next, my butt's been wet. Now, a common error on this one is people put the stress on the wrong syllable. It's not my bus been wet. It's not my bus been wet. It's my bus been wet. Say it. My bus been wet.
My bus been wet.
Next, we have a word that's much simpler. Palmist. Palmist. Can you say palmist? President Biden, palmist.
And if we do, and I'm sure we can proclaim the palmist with the palmist who wrote these following words.
All right, now that you've got four words in the bag, we're going to move on to a really complex Bidenese word. Do you think you're ready for it? You're going to really have to pay attention here. This is sort of advanced level Bidenese. Very long word, okay? This is what it is. It's a very long word. Are you ready? Truender dash dubba de pressure. Truender dash dubba de pressure. One word. One word. Truender dash dubba de pressure. Say it a little more quickly. Truender dash dubba de pressure. Truender dash dubba de pressure. President Biden, go.
I'll lead an effective strategy to mobilize truender dash dubba de pressure.
Truender dash dubba de pressure. You guys did fantastic. You learned five new words in a new language, and now you know more Bidenese than you knew yesterday. What can I do but leave President Biden with the last word?
So I'm going to say something outrageous. I have never been particularly poor at calculating how to get things done in the United States Senate. So the best way to get something done, if it holds near and dear to you that you like to be able to, anyway.
Yeah.
We're ready to get a lot. I got hairy legs.
That is, you know, no one made any of that up. No one did. Now, you remember how much noise there was when Trump did his kafefi, right, instead of coffee? Remember the kafefi and it became a big,
yes.
For like 6 months that was a thing and people were still doing it at the end of his presidency. And when George W. Bush made that stupid comment about, like, you fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice, you can't fool me again. Because he screwed it up.
And when he choked on a pretzel.
When he choked on a pretzel. Those became. But here we've got, like, Biden hasn't even been president for a year, and we've got, like, 25 different words that the guy can't say. I mean, he's really not coping. And he's a 78-year-old man. He's the oldest man to ever be president. Oldest.
Yeah.
He's 79.
There were now. Just good candidates available. They just weren't.
Oy.
People, the majority of the country wanted anyone but Trump. But now they have to deal with the consequences.
Yeah, you made your bed, now lie in it. You get the government you deserve. Funny thing is that I'm sure the Taliban watched this and they're like, when these guys pull out, oh, it's going to be fantastic. We can go back to our own version of heaven. We're going to have burqas on the women. We're going to be stoning people for adultery. We're going to throw them off the top of buildings if we find out that they're gay. We're going to make sure that we execute people in the middle of the day like we used to back in the good old days of Kabul. I mean, I remember reading about this stuff. And for some reason, I couldn't get enough information about Afghanistan. Like if someone had been there, I'd sit and talk to them for 6 hours and never run out of questions. I was listening to every word. I was fascinated by Afghanistan. I couldn't believe there was a country in the world that was as backward and medieval and primitive as Afghanistan was. And I say that when we come from, you know, a country in South Africa where there definitely are two kinds of South Africa, as Thabo Mbeki used to say. You know, there's the kind of South Africa where people have Wi-Fi, and there's the kind of South Africa where people are really scraping together a living every day and barely making it through the day. So I'm not looking at this from, you know, the point of view of somebody who's grown up in Vancouver or Seattle or New York, where I've never encountered any kind of the third world. Afghanistan still fascinates me. It's a place of absolute barbarism. And believe me, the last 20 years haven't been a picnic there either. But it started to get better. And now we're back having the same conversations. Unbelievable. If you'd told me this in 2002, after the US had made new rubble out of all the old rubble that country's constructed out of, I'd have said to you, no way. Not possible.
If you had to take away everything you know, everything westernized, and just pretend you've had a lobotomy, and you woke up one day and you were living in this country and that was your life and it's all you knew, would it be Afghanistan or North Korea?
Oh my God, what a choice. Oh, you see, I would say Afghanistan, because at least in Afghanistan, you have some semblance of personal freedom. Like you can still, you know, the regime there is so incompetent and it's so fractious. You can join the Northern Alliance rebels, for example, and you can fight for, you know, that kind of Afghanistan. Or you can join the Taliban and you can fight for that kind of Afghanistan. Or you could just try and run across the border because those borders are so porous. You can't do any of those things in North Korea. You don't have the opportunity to, you know, and I mean, in both countries, it's really difficult to read, especially if you're a woman. There isn't that much material. There's pretty much in North Korea, there's whatever Kim Jong-un and his regime decide you can read. So you don't get to choose.
Yeah, your syllabus, basically.
Right. And that does not involve anything that they don't approve of. And then in Afghanistan, there's pretty much just the Quran. And I'm talking under the Taliban. And, you know, recently there's obviously been, you know, it's women were able to attend school, which that sounds so basic. It sounds so simple. Yeah. Women couldn't learn in Afghanistan before this. They weren't allowed to show their faces in public. If you had a little girl, like your husband would curse you because he didn't want girls. He wanted boys, you know. There's no such thing as consensual sex in Afghanistan. Do me a favor, you know.
I remember at one point, and I don't know, it probably still exists, but there are these secret, like almost YouTube-like channels made specifically for women where they can just do a little bit of learning every day.
Oh, it's insane. So, yeah, I mean, that's a tough bargain, but if it had to be North Korea or Afghanistan, I'd still choose Afghanistan rather. Horrible as that country is and short as my life may be. I heard the most interesting thing the other day. Apparently, if you're over 65 years old, you are in the lucky 8% of the world's population. Like, only 8% of the population of planet Earth right now gets to live beyond 65. So, I mean...
And yet we always see it as a huge tragedy if somebody in their 40s or 50s dies.
Yeah, so what it was is somebody read this out to me while I was at that race day on Thursday when we were doing all the driving and everything. And somebody, one of the guys had a WhatsApp where they broke down the population of the world into 100 people. So they basically condensed everything and said statistically, if you are in your 60, your late 60, 65 plus, you make up only 8% of the world's population, because the other... what would that be? 83%? Hang on.
Yeah,
83%.
No.
What did I say?
92.
Yeah, sorry. So that's quite right. 8 and 92. God, my maths is crap. So yeah.
It's terrible.
If you were in the 92, no, because I was being confused by other stats. They were telling me about wealth and kind of the ability to get work and all that kind of thing. There was a lot of information there. I'd actually like to go through it with you one morning, because it's really interesting to break it down and gives you perspective about how most people in the world live. But essentially, so, those 92% are all people under the age of 65, and many of those people will never reach the age of 65, despite all of the tremendous advances we've made in medicine, the fact that people are healthier than ever. And you know, if you think about like an 80-year-old or Joe Biden, he's 1 year shy of 80 now. And you think he could be president of the United States, where he's essentially living in bonus time. You know how in a soccer match they give you a little bit of injury time at the end? That's like a bonus? Yeah. That's kind of where he's at the moment. And if you've got parents who are in their 60s, like, that's a huge privilege. If you've got people who you love who are still alive in their 70s and 80s, that is unheard of to all of our ancestors. Never happened. Like, if you were 80 years old in the Middle Ages in Europe, people were like, my God, he's been around for thousands of years, you know? There's no way that people can live that long. It's insane.
He's seen it all. Yeah. But it's largely because we get caught up in our bubbles, right? Is that it's so funny. You're talking about two things that have just come up in my life. I was talking to my mom a couple of weeks ago about exactly what you're talking about, is that we get caught up in our bubble, right? Is that most people in the world, as much as people are like, so I'm not one for social mobility and like mumbo jumbo like that. There is no social mobility. Most people live in squalor in the world, but people forget that because they got Wi-Fi and their biggest problem is that their Tinder date was late. So most people in the world actually still live in squalor. That's one thing. But to go back to what you were saying about the American situation, I highly recommend a book. It's probably the best social commentary I've read in a while, and I try and keep on it. Is a book by a guy called Graham Allison, who's a superb sort of global sort of commentator for me. I've really enjoyed his stuff over the last few years. It's called Destined for War, Thucydides' Trap. It's a really, really good interpretation of, basically, if I can summarize it like this, is the world's gone full on Montessori, you know, like everybody gets a medal and the freedoms we have, right, come at the end of a barrel, but people don't want to hear that anymore because, and Gareth, you'd probably be able to explain this far more articulately than me, is, you know, there's the great moment when Caesar said to Brutus, are those barbarians at my gate? As he didn't believe that the barbarians would dare cross this wall that hadn't been sort of broken in however long it was of the Roman Empire, you know, is that's where we are, is that we've now become so gluttonous and starting to enjoy ourselves is we get soft. And that's what's kind of happening.
Yeah.
And now China are making their move. And now, you know, these things are possible.
This idea that humans, and I've got to read this book of yours because it sounds really interesting. It sounds especially pertinent to what we're going through in the world today. And maybe even prescient, because there was the research study that I actually found someone posted it on Facebook and I reposted it. But I'll get into this in a moment or two, because I do want to get to headlines, and we've covered quite a lot of territory for the first thing in the morning. I hope it's not too much for you to wake up and have to hear all this. But there are a couple of interesting comments before we get to the Facebook post. Reporters risk their lives to put a foot in Afghanistan, says Robin. That's true. In Afghanistan, you don't have to give your goats to a fat dictator. So there's people answering your question about whether they'd prefer to go to Afghanistan or to, you know, Pyongyang.
North Korea.
When you join in the Taliban, you get a gun, a great outfit, and eyeliner. Who could refuse? That's a funny thing. Like the Taliban, there's this brilliant book I've got that someone gave me as a gift when I was so fascinated with Afghanistan. It's called Taliban, and it's got postcards and pictures that they used to take of Taliban soldiers. And they all wear makeup. And then they have these pictures of themselves. They're a little bit like, they're almost a bit like drag queens in some way, because they
like Kiss, the rock band.
Yeah, they like the dressing up. They enjoy the dressing up, and they're very into like being beautiful. They like to be thought of as these holy warriors. And even though they are dead against the whole gay thing, a lot of them have sex with men, because it's part of the that's acceptable if you're in a holy crusade or you're in a holy war. Crusade's not the right word, but you get it. And there's this weird thing that they do, and they're all, it's almost like a catalog of like 1980s beauty. There's blush and there's eyeliner and they wear their turbans, and they're very particular about the way they photographed. And it's so strange. It's incredibly weird.
Yeah.
The whole of Afghanistan is just such a weird place. So here's something interesting from Tracy, the Crown Prince of Dubai's daughter and wife. The wife is in hiding in exile in London. His daughter is being held prisoner in Dubai. No one's seen her in years. I saw a really interesting documentary about her, actually. So that's a very bizarre situation. That doesn't mean people die before 65. It just means a number of people at that age right now. There's a huge difference. That's also true. But longevity is less than likely in most countries. And that's because of access to food, resources, medical care, all of that stuff. You know, it's very rare that people live that long, Carl. Michael also says, also less than 5% of the world are vegetarian, and 90% of those because they can't afford meat. The other 10% live in their heads. It's an interesting, interesting breakdown, but quite right by Michael. Bulelo, someone wants you to repeat. Just repeat the name of the book quickly.
Destined for War by Graham Allison, and it's Destined for War, the Thucydides Trap. So just to tell you quickly, it's mostly about the threat of China, and Thucydides, of course, is actually a really important figure in history. Probably, in fact, the first real Western historian. A lot of people go to Herodotus, but it's actually Thucydides who wrote the Peloponnesian War documents. And really interesting guy. Thucydides Trap, and there's a whole philosophical theory about it, but I'm not going to bore people.
No,
I think we've done that enough.
That's good stuff. Yeah, Leanne, you wanted to say?
Yeah.
A quick note on vegetarianism and veganism. Yes, eating vegetarian is a lot easier on the pocket, but the problem is it's so popular, and it's becoming more and more popularized that these foods that were not even looked at twice before are now costing more. Things like beans and other forms of protein that we weren't bothered by before, which is really sad, because poor people are battling even more. I mean, I went to Pick and Pay yesterday and put a yellow pepper into my trolley. I had it weighed, put it into my trolley, got to the counter, and the woman said to me, "Do you know that this one pepper is 25 rand?"
Yeah.
And I was like, shit. You're actually right. And I'm actually pissed off about it, so I'm not going to buy it, because you can get a green one for half the price. But because it's a trend, not a trend, but it's more popular to have a different color pepper, it costs more.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. We can have this conversation tomorrow, but I just want to put this in your consciousness. And Leanne, I'd love to hear your thoughts on it a bit later. So this weekend, I had a really interesting conversation, and now I know I'm old. My aunt sent my nephew to me because he's gotten a little soft, and he went to one of those yuppie schools, and she knows she can't send him to my dad. So she went to the worst version, a super diluted version. And he's starting to talk to me. So he said to me, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, because it's been on my mind. He's starting to act out, and I'm under pressure and all of this. I said, "Listen here, chief." And this applies to me now. It applies to all of us as middle-class people. But I said to him, "Listen here, my guy, don't tell me about pressure, because I know how your mom grew up. Pressure is a single mother fresher. You're being paid for, you have a car, you go to university. Yeah. And I mean, I kind of lost my cool with him because I was like, don't do this. Don't be a dickhead.
Yeah.
You're middle class and far better, actually. You live in Eagle Canyon. Please, don't tell me about pressure. You don't know pressure. Guy's having a breakdown now because I'm telling him he needs to toughen up. You're not under pressure. Don't ever, I said, don't ever, ever tell me you're under pressure again. You're an ungrateful
little
and
shit.
I can't use the rest of that sentence.
Well, this is precisely what that Facebook post is about. So I'll get into that in a minute. But let's just look at a couple of headlines that are going on around us. Apparently, more than 3 million rand a month is spent on security at Charlotte Makaike Hospital, where they stole all of the stuff. They stole 200,000 rands worth of stuff. And we're paying 3 million rand a month to keep the place secure. This is a government health facility. You know, again, let's bring on the National Health Insurance, you know, NHI. That's what we need. I know. Let's give government more responsibility over our health and over our lives because they manage it so well so far. Anyway.
Scary.
Apparently, the Gauteng Health MEC, Nomathemba Mokgethi, said in a written reply to questions from the DA's Jack Bloom. Can I just say again, what would we do if the DA wasn't asking these questions? We would never know about any of this stuff. Remember, if you're in Parliament or if you're in the provincial legislature, you get to ask questions and ministers and MECs have to reply to you with the truth. And if they don't tell the truth, we can investigate them. And usually we can find out whether there's skullduggery going on. Now, if Jack Bloom from the DA hadn't asked, and I want to ask this specifically of all those people who are always saying, the DA is just as bad as the ANC. They're not. They're absolutely not. DA's Jack Bloom asks a question because he goes, hang on a second. A bunch of my constituents have just told me a story about 200,000 rands worth of stuff being stolen from the hospital. I'm going to ask the MEC. So she comes back and says, we've had 450,000 rand spent on electronic surveillance every month. We've got 2,894,000 rand a month being spent on guards and security. And we've still had over 200,000 rand worth of stuff stolen from the hospital. Sorry about that. Don't know how that happened.
Whoa.
So to me, the most interesting thing about this story is that we wouldn't know about any of this if it wasn't for Jack Bloom of the DA. So again, you can complain about them all you like, but that is what politicians are meant to do.
And remembering that this is a government hospital and it's where our taxes go.
Correct. And can you believe that it is 9 years since Marikana? That's just mind-blowing.
Wow.
To me. Yeah.
Yeah, I saw that. Still no answers.
Monday, today, marks 9 years since the Marikana massacre, where 34 miners died, 78 others were injured at the hands of the South African police. The country will commemorate a defining moment in history and in our young democracy, in which mine workers who embarked in a three-week strike were gunned down in the Northwest. Amnesty International South Africa has raised concerns that close to a decade later, not a single police officer has been charged for the murders, while the family has seen little change to their economic conditions. And
we still have imperative.
Hold on, one at a time. Mbulelo?
Sorry.
Go ahead, Leah. Go ahead, Leah.
To live with, I've forgotten, Hugo.
Go. Mbulelo, what did you want to say? Don't be so polite.
No, I just... No, I was saying we've got empirical evidence of citizen number one having sent a certain email. That's out. That's been verified. He still hasn't answered for that. And it's 9 years later. And
correct.
You voted for him to be president. This is this is the country we're living in. Listen, to give you an example, the guy who was going to be the Chancellor of Germany when Merkel got it, he lost the race because there were allegations and an algorithm said he may have cheated on an exam in university, and that put him out the race. That's important for us to discern where we should be versus where we are.
But isn't it outrageous and horrifying that not one policeman has ever been arrested or charged with the murder of these people? And they were murdered in cold blood. You can see it on video, right? You can actually see the video footage. It's right there for everyone to see.
What's even more horrifying is that the actual answer to that is that's life in South Africa. That's how much they've eroded our standards in this country. And that, in fact, I shouldn't say they, that's how much we have eroded ourselves because we are a part of it. It's awful.
So I think that that's a particularly outrageous and stunning thing. That's 9 years ago. It doesn't feel like 9 years ago since we all saw that happen. There's a driver's license backlog. Oh, you tell me about it. I've been driving around without a license for how long? Because I can't get an appointment. It's unlikely that Gauteng motorists will meet the grace period deadline to renew their expired licenses due to the backlog caused. You know, again, so just abandon the idea of having a driver's license, guys, because you can't administer it. What's the point of having a system where the system's falling apart and where the people that you trust to manage the system can't do it? So the Gauteng MEC, again, they must be having a great week. All this Charlotte Makleke stuff and now this, and the fact that Marikana is 9 years ago and the police have never been...
Oh, you're so glad you don't have that job.
Jesus, what a shithole. And this is our province. This is the one that we, the three of us live in and many of our listeners live in. He's conducted this Gauteng MEC, Jacob Mamabolo, for transport. He's conducted an unannounced visit at the Themba DLTC where he found issues with systems, equipment, non-functioning booths. Oh, welcome to our world, because most of these politicians don't know what it's like. They get driven around, right? MEC says his office will be reaching out to the National Department of Transport. Who's the minister there again? Fikile Mbalula. Good luck. To find solutions for the issues that they're experiencing, and we'll be looking into adding new facilities for Gauteng. Oh, so the ones that we've got already don't work properly, so we'll just build new ones. We won't fix the ones that we've currently got. He's also called on applicants to arrive for their slots when they're allocated. We can't get slots allocated, Minister or MEC. Just do your job. Otherwise, you know what's going to happen? People will stop caring. They'll just stop caring about having licenses. We'll just drive illegally. That's what I'm doing at the moment.
Just go ask Michael Jordan how he came up with e-bucks and FNB was the biggest supplier of iPads in this, on the continent within 1 year. Just ask him how our system works. How did you do e-bucks? We need that for our driver's license system. There we go. There's your solution. I've given you one possible solution.
Yeah. Well, there we go. I think that's a wrap of some of the headlines. We've got lots of other stuff to get into just now. We've also got Dr. Hanan joining us in a second or two for It's Going to Be Okay. And I know that this Monday morning, there's a lot probably on everybody's minds, as there is every Monday, especially because over the weekend, you get to breathe a little bit. You get back into it on Monday and you go, oh my God, I've got so much to do. Well, it's going to be okay. And we'll be joined by Dr. Hanan in just a moment. And we go, Leanne, you're on mute. We're going to talk a little bit to him about jealousy and narcissism. These are really interesting discussions, and I think that these are going to be quite frightening to some of us, because we may be living with that in our lives. We may be living with it in our own heads, and Dr. Hanan has no doubt got some interesting points of view to share with us there. Also coming up a little bit later on, Collectomania is back for this Monday morning. We'll be checking in on some really exciting and interesting collections. It just amazes me what people have in their homes, what they spend their money on. Today is also the anniversary of Elvis's death. You know, 16th of August. But I received an article from Randall Abrams, who He's written a thing on, you know, how much he loves Elvis, right? He wrote a brilliant article on Elvis. I hope it's going to be published somewhere. I'll let you know if it is. But I don't feel it's my place to share it without his permission, but it's really good. And that would have been 1977, the year I was born. So 44 years ago now that Elvis was, I mean, he still has this unbelievable pull on people. You know, he's still got this incredible, indelible influence on music 44 years later. It's quite something. Wouldn't you like to have some influence in the world? Well, long after you're dead, you still can. Just look at Elvis. It's amazing. So Kanda Kulu says, never mind driving, what a fuck up at firearms licensing. That's also true. Renewing
that name's outrageous, by the way.
I hope you know
that means big head.
Big head. Kanda Kulu. Good Cop says, reviewing driver's licenses is one big money-making scheme. Well, I don't know why you need to renew your driver's license every 5 years. I think that that's just a stupid situation. You should get your driver's license for until you're 70, right? Because unless you have some kind of condition or you are no longer able through some physical...
Yeah, mental... I mean, you may have had a stroke on the way or something.
Sure, and then you can't...
Head injury.
Sure, then you can't drive anymore. Fair enough. But then it's up to you to sort that out. But why we have to renew them every 5 years? That sounds like it's just a money-making scheme. It doesn't make any sense. It's like the same with firearm licenses. You should get one firearm license per person, and then that person can get as many guns as they like. They're going to be responsible for all those guns, or they're not. And if they're not, you could take their license away. Same goes with a car. You get your driver's license for life. You write the exam. You do your learners. Then you do the yard test. You show them you can parallel park and alley duck and all that stuff. And then you've got your license. Ta-da! You should get better, not worse. Right. Sounds obvious.
Oh, that's funny. So with the gun one, did you say you have to keep renewing it? Like...
gun licenses are ridiculous. So every 5 years, just like a driver's license, you have to, if you've got a self-defense weapon, you have to renew that, which is just money-making. And then if you've got a hunting or sports shooting license every 10 years, and it's just crazy. You have to do that for every gun. So if you have three guns,
but
you have to do all of that three times, well, three applications every 5 years. And everyone costs.
Okay. I can kind of get it with the gun one. Do you have to redo a test? Because
no,
here's what I'm thinking.
They don't make you redo the test.
It's in
pure paperwork. That's the worst part of it.
Okay.
But I agree. If it was a test, you know, if it was to check that you still have the skills, that you haven't deteriorated mentally, you become a nutcase that's going to go out and shoot
people.
Or
lost your eyesight.
Or that you actually know how to look after your weapon. That would be fine. You know, then I wouldn't have a problem with it.
Like the last thing I want, and I'm not being funny, is a man or woman who's, I don't know, lost their child, divorced, now they've fallen apart mentally.
Mm-hmm.
What have they got? A gun.
Yeah.
They're capable of anything. The gun one, I can kind of understand.
Again, you know? This is assuming that the people who are doing the applications know better than the people who are applying. And in many cases, the police...
Just, me there.
You know, someone said to me, have you been into a police station lately? And I said, yes, I went to go and do this gun license thing. And they said to me, isn't it horrifying how the police stations still feel like it's 1984? They really do. You know, I've got like a picture of... All they do is change the pictures every couple of years as the president changes or the minister of police or, you know, the national commissioner, who they probably have to change every week. But they have those pictures up in the police office, police station. And it is exactly like it must have been 20 or 30 years ago.
Oh, it's horrible. What a place to work. You go there every day and you look at those same brick walls. Mm. Somebody prints a new misspelled sign and sticky tapes it to the wall.
It's those brick walls. It's those clinker brick walls. It's the old apartheid regime loved that stuff. And they built all the police stations the same way.
Suck like a box there.
Anyway. All right, let's get to Dr. Hanan. How are you doing this morning? Let us check in on your mental health. Let's tackle what is a very difficult but a very interesting and a hugely personal subject for all of us, and that is our mental well-being. The new normal. We're going to check in with Dr. Hanan Bushkin, who we know well by now. If you haven't heard of him before, where have you been? Here he is this morning. Hey, Dr. Hanan, how are you?
Hey guys, nice to see you. It's been 2 weeks. How are you?
I know. We missed you last week and people have been asking. So let me get straight to it because I know we don't want to waste any time. We received two emails recently. We thought we could discuss these issues together because they're often related. So Mandia asked us whether jealousy has its roots in low self-esteem. And then I got this email from Anonymous, and maybe you want to address them both at the same time. I've been in a relationship with a narcissist for over a year. I saw warning signs a month into the relationship because he was extremely jealous when my male friend hugged me once. I have been absolutely miserable. We argue every weekend over his jealousy and insecurities. I'm exhausted. I have tried ending the relationship three times, but he manages to manipulate me to feel sorry for him and stay. I've been isolated from my friends and family. And I feel very depressed and alone in my situation. Please ask Dr. Hanan to give us some advice on how to take steps to get out of this relationship without being manipulated and controlled? The floor is yours. Where do we begin?
Whoa. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Right. Why don't we start with the easy stuff? So let's just deal with the narcissist first. You know, a little bit of where the term comes from. There's a mythical story of a mythical god called Narcissus. And Narcissus goes down to the river to wash his face. And he looks down into the river and he sees a reflection of himself. And he falls so madly in love with what he looks like that he can't actually stop staring at himself. And that's where he dies. Because he just cannot get up for food. He cannot get up for water. He cannot get up and go back home because he loves his own reflection. That's Narcissus. And narcissists love their own reflection. They love, at least externally, and I'll tell you why I say that and why I need to highlight externally in a second, but they love how they speak and they love what they say and they fall in love with the content of their message and their inner circles. And this is what they fall in love with. And I say externally because internally they're very weak and insecure and completely lack confidence. And the truth is we don't see narcissists in our practice. And the reason why is because they never have an issue. It's never their problem. It's like the one driver that's driving against traffic and is blaming everybody else for driving the wrong way. I'm going the completely right way. It's everybody else that's doing this to me. So narcissists are usually sent to therapy by their parents and siblings and partners a lot, but they never come into therapy because I have an issue. It doesn't work that way. So dealing with a narcissist is very difficult because they never have an issue. There's never an acknowledgement of this is my position, this is my fault. As a matter of fact, if you had to make a narcissist turn inwards and self-reflect, they collapse. Their ego just shatters. They're not capable, because their ego is so fragile, they're not capable of turning inwards and going, let me share with you what my part in this is. So dealing with the narcissist and those people that have been in relationship with narcissists is incredibly abusive, because it's always you that's driving against traffic. It's always you that's causing me to say this. It's always you that's making me, you know, do this to you or say this to you. And narcissists are absolute masters at gaslighting. Hmm. Do you know what gaslighting is?
Yeah, this is where they say it's not you, it's me. It's like whataboutism. And then they tell you there's a much bigger problem on your side than there is the problem you've identified with them. Mm. And confuse you and make you think that there's something wrong with you.
Completely. Gaslighting is the worst form of abuse. And narcissists are really, really masterful at gaslighting other people. And for those of you who don't know what gaslighting is, this is a great illustration. It actually comes from a play of a husband and a wife sitting in a room, and the husband turns down the gas, so the light begins to dim. And the wife turns to the husband and says, is it getting dark in here? And he goes, no, not at all. And he purposefully turns down the gas even more, and the light dims even more. And she says to him, are you sure it's not getting darker in here? And he goes, no, it's your imagination. And the wife actually goes crazy, because she thinks she's imagining what she's seeing. Mm. And gaslighters make other people, especially loved one, double guess and triple guess their own reality. So it's like, imagine a husband and a wife, and the husband is cheating on the wife. And the wife says to him, is everything okay between us? And the husband goes, absolutely. You're just imagining things. You're just insecure.
Yeah.
And it makes somebody doubt their own reality. So back to narcissists. Narcissists are masterful at gaslighting. And what I tell people in relationship, because the question was, what do I do? Well, you have two options. Either let the narcissist go and get some serious help in order to self-reflect and see their part in their own doing, in their own reality, which is a very, very important thing for social engagement, the ability to go, what is my part in this? Mm-hmm. Children are not able to do that. And that's why we don't let children manage government, and we don't let children manage airplanes, and we don't let children manage heavy machinery, because they're not able to go, what is my part in this, and am I capable of managing my world?
But
adults
should just
be able to internalize.
I just want to ask you a question about this narcissist thing, because it does come up all the time. People have learned this word probably from psychologists, and they've now started to diagnose people themselves, and they're not professionals. So let's just be very clear. I mean, there are people who have problems. There are people who create problems. There are people who have massive self-confidence issues and external realities which are not necessarily in any way inclined to the truth. But there are also, and I'm sure you've heard it in your practice, that people are, I'm married to a narcissist. Now, how do you know for sure? Because this is a fairly serious diagnosis. What you're telling us is that these people have a tremendous problem and they need to deal with that problem. You're even saying they need to go for help. So let's be clear on what that is from the clinical point of view, because otherwise we can have everyone running around self-diagnosing and diagnosing others as being narcissists. And the word is already becoming ubiquitous. Anyone who doesn't like anyone else calls them a narcissist these days.
Yeah, like all these psychiatric diagnoses are completely overused. We use these broad brushstrokes to define everybody, you know, like the I'm so depressed.
Yeah.
Everybody's so depressed.
Right.
And everybody's so anxious. And it doesn't mean that you should be seeking for help. I mean, we all get sad and we all get fearful and we all get stressed and we all feel insecure sometimes. And, That's life. And it happens.
Isn't it true that a lot of narcissism is also part of the reason that things advance forward? There are a lot of these very toxic and dangerous narcissists who are responsible for inventing things and creating things and making the world work for them, but for no one else. So, I mean, we've just got to be careful that we don't overuse this one and become amateur psychologists ourselves in a place where we don't actually have the authority to do this.
Completely. And how do you define, and it's a very fine line between being a narcissist and expressing self-love. I mean, we all kind of all fall, like, you know, appreciate yourself and love yourself and, you know, fall in love with yourself. Put yourself first. You know, there's a billion quotes that you can check online. Love yourself first, put yourself first. So how do you define that between a healthy self-love and a toxic self-love? And I'd like to highlight to people that a relationship is really a contract between two people. This is what I want from you, and this is what you want from me. Can we fulfill each other's needs? And the moment that is broken, the moment I can no longer fulfill your needs, or you can no longer fulfill my needs, then we're going to negotiate. And if we can't get to a point where we can fulfill each other's needs, then we're going to go find somebody that can. But hopefully we can. Hopefully we can. But with a narcissist, you'll see that they're just not negotiable. So one thing that will define a narcissist is that you cannot negotiate your stance. So when you say to a narcissist, I need you to just tweak a little bit to the left, whatever that means, they will blame you for it. You're the reason why I'm not doing it. You're stonewalling me. You're the reason why I'm not behaving that way, or I am saying what I'm saying. So a narcissist, one thing is that they're not negotiable. It's actually abusive. So it's not like this self-love that the healthy, I don't even want to call it a narcissist, because this healthy self-love that people have is wonderful. It's great. Put yourself first, love yourself, but have the ability to see how you're negotiating what your part is in the real interaction between you and someone else.
What about jealousy? So Mandia's first email was about jealousy, and the narcissist email also brought up that jealousy is a big part of the way that she has been manipulated by her partner. So let's just talk about jealousy's, you know, it's something that all human beings kind of know the definition of, but where does it come from? And what does it indicate to you with your clinical background? What alarm bells go off in your head when you hear about jealousy?
So Gareth, if we take any emotion on the spectrum, and there's probably over 250 words for describing emotions, the truth is every single person should and would feel all of that on the spectrum. That's what life is. That's the way it works. People that don't feel emotions are dysfunctional. We don't function well in society. And so, for example, I'll get to jealousy in a second, but if you take guilt, guilt is a very socially appropriate emotion. It regulates us. So people that don't feel guilty, they have an inability to feel guilty. We send them away to psychiatric wards, or we send them away to prisons. They're not welcome in our social rule set or social structure. So guilt is a very important emotion.
Right.
But the moment you feel any emotion in a way that breaks you down, so if I feel guilty for things that I shouldn't be feeling guilty over, that's when it becomes dysfunctional. Jealousy, there's nothing wrong with being, let's call it the healthy version of jealousy, where, hey, I like what you have and I want to work hard for it. Hey, I like what you possess and I want to work hard for it without impeding on your rights or on your space. The moment jealousy is filled with resentment and bitterness and hostility towards your space, that's when it becomes dysfunctional. So, you know, there's a saying, great walls or tall walls make for good neighbors. Absolutely. And what that means is the moment I know my rule set and I know my space and you know your rules, then we can get along. I can do my thing on my side and you can do your thing on your side. But the moment any emotion makes me kind of want to cheat and take a little bit of your side, that's when it becomes dysfunctional. And jealousy is exactly the same. The moment I feel I want what you have and I'm going to come and get it outside of your permission, that's when it becomes dysfunctional.
Sure. All right. Chris T says, what do you do if you know you have narcissistic tendencies? Where do you go? Who do you see? That's profoundly kind of...
And isn't that ironic in itself, because a narcissist doesn't know that they're a narcissist?
Yeah. If somebody comes to me and says to me in my practice, Hanan, I think I have narcissistic tendencies, I'm like, you're not a narcissist. Narcissists have an inability to turn inwards. They just can't. As I told you, their egos just are so fragile that they will crack. So it's wonderful that he says that. And my answer to him is, it's great. And which part of your action do you feel it doesn't take other people's consideration or other people's feelings, motives into account? And if you need somebody to reflect back to you, speak to a mentor, a rabbi, a priest, a psychologist that will help you give you that insight for sure.
All right. There are lots of other questions coming in here. I think you've helped us to identify a lot of things that maybe for some people haven't really occurred to them as being problematic. But this narcissism is something which we are dealing with in society and which we continue to deal with on a personal level all the way through. Are there a lot of narcissists? Would you say that, it's 1 in 10? Would you say it's rare? Would you say there are plenty to go around? How many of the people in the world have this problem?
Oh, plenty, plenty, plenty. And you know what the problem with narcissists are is that they create echo chambers. They surround themselves with people that justify and enable that narcissism. So they surround themselves with people that go, you're right, you're right, you're right. Everybody's going against traffic. You're going the right way. And they love those people that justify what they're doing because it doesn't then require them to change.
All right. There's a lot to think about. Very, very interesting. Please keep your questions coming for Dr. Hanan. We want to make sure that we've got all the most interesting things to deal with on a weekly basis. Today is no exception. And have a good week, Dr. Hanan. Thank you.
Nice to see you guys. Have a good week.
Awesome. That's fantastic. There are a couple of things that he said there that I was like, oh God, I think I've got narcissistic tendencies. But you know this about me. We've had this conversation. In fact, didn't we do a test on this once?
The thing for you as well is that it's exactly what you raised. It can be an overused term and dangerously so by people who don't really know what a narcissist is. It's also one of the problems or side effects of being in the limelight. And I've mentioned this to you before, where men will very easily call you a narcissist, and that comes from a place of envy.
Well, that's way back to jealousy, but yeah. Look,
yeah.
I just there were a few things he said there, and I thought, maybe that's. I'm sure for you too, Mbulelo. You're like, ooh, cuts a bit close to the bone, you know.
No, for sure. But I just want to say, and it is not because we work together. I know narcissists, and I constantly live at that door. You are the complete opposite, actually, of a narcissist, really.
Let's see.
In my observation.
Yeah, well, all right.
And I'm not just saying that to be nice. I'm not looking for a date.
That'd be nice.
I'm not lonely. I'm not lonely. I wouldn't know how to deal with you being nice.
That would be very, very odd.
I don't want to go on a date with you, Gareth. I don't want to go on a date.
Thank you. At least you're being honest about it. All right, listen, coming up. Fantastic stuff in Collectomania. We're going to speak to Wesley about all his aquariums. Yes, aquaria. Shouldn't it be aquaria? Leanne, you're the English expert here. Come on. Aquariums?
Aquaria. I would say aquariums.
Okay,
aquariums.
All right.
It's the age of aquariums.
All right. Michael says narcissism is endless selfies being taken. Yeah.
There's also vanity that comes into this, which is different. And,
did you fire CS and Ben? Wow, this is going back a long way, Carl, because you're a narcissist and they wouldn't comply. Comply with what? Comply with
and
what?
Ben's still around. Yeah, and, Ben's still around. And CS was never fired.
No. McGowan BB says, Gareth, you're just arrogant. But the fact that you can recognize those tendencies means you're not one. All right. That's nice of you. Thank you. I just thought it was interesting to do a little bit of self-reflection at the end of that, particularly because Dr. Hanan said that narcissists can't. All right. When we come back, we've got Collectomania. We've got lots of cool stuff to talk about. And I'll read you that post from Facebook, which I found really interesting. Let's see what you have to think and say about it, too. That's easy. You can message us on the YouTube Live. You can also send us a message to 0797482090. It's just after 7.
CliffCentral.com.